Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Before we get to Ann Coulter's new book, Godless, I'd like to ask you to pray for Israel's military for wisdom and strength now that they've entered Gaza in attempt to rescue a kidnapped soldier, and four of their fighter jets have buzzed the home of Syrian President Assad to urge him to pressure his terrorist guests, Hamas, to release 19-year-old Corporal Gilad Shalit. Now, Assad, he was home to experience that sonic boom. And remember, in 2003, Israel's warplanes flew so low over Assad's home that his palace windows shattered. So hopefully he will get the point. And please pray for clear-headedness and courage for those seeking to rescue this kidnapped Jewish soldier. Now, Ann Coulter has written another best-selling tour de force called The Church of Liberalism, Godless. Now, I've only read the first 110 pages. When you interview an author, you should have read the whole book. I had a hard time wresting it from my wife, Cheryl, who couldn't put it down the last two nights. And I must say, it is a searing criticism of liberals, and also it is hysterical. Ann Coulter can make you laugh out loud page after page. Now, in my feisty interview last week with Bernard Goldberg, I quoted his recent statement in agreement, saying that Ann Coulter is a national treasure. Our hope is that she becomes an eternal treasure. And for the massive publicity the book Godless is getting, it seems that liberals don't really mind being called godless. Ann Coulter, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Great to be here. Thank you. And thank you for reading 100 pages of the book. I actually don't expect that much of interviewers. That's great.
Yeah. And in your book, you criticize those who interview you and don't read a word.
Yes, the difference is quite noticeable.
So I got as far as I could get. Now, Ann Coulter, it's almost as though liberals are coming out of the closet on godlessness because they're not complaining about that.
Yes, it's been quite striking. I think so. I'd notice if somebody called me godless, but no, that's like water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
Okay, we're godless. Let's get back to the Jersey Girls.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you point out that when Democrats choose someone to reach out to people of faith, they have a hard time getting someone who's not an atheist.
Yes, it's quite comical.
You recall about Brenda Peterson, who was hired by the DNC in your book?
Right, who signed the amicus brief to the Supreme Court trying to take under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. So
that's their idea of you know, getting you know, the equivalent of Franklin Graham.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Now, John Kerry didn't do much better when he hired a religion advisor, Mara Vanderslice.
Oh, yes. She was quite a character.
Yeah, she'd speak at ACT UP events, but not criticize their members for spitting the Eucharist onto the floor of St. Paddy's Cathedral. So these are the people that the Democrats hire when they try to reach out to people of faith.
Right, right.
So there's a crisis, obviously, on the left in America, and you call it the Church of Liberalism, Godless.
Yes, because it is a religion. Liberalism has its own cosmology, its own belief in miracles, its own total worldview. And by denying that they're a religion, they get to spend 6 hours a day for 12 years of a child's life indoctrinating children into their religion. This is the goal of all totalitarians. I quote Lenin, Hitler, you know, give us the textbooks and I will control the next generation. Well, this is what the Church of Liberalism has done, to the point that, you know, children are now in government schools across the country being bused to see Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth on global warming, which is a crucial part of their religion. But the mic gets yanked from a valedictorian when she mentions God in her speech.
Yeah, now, and Al Gore, basically, he's one of their end-of-the-world doomsday prophets.
Right.
And they even have that part of religion sewn up with
right.
their own eschatology that it's all over. In fact, Stephen Hawking says we need to go to the moon or Mars to avoid global warming.
Right,
I guess he's never looked at the temperature on the moon.
No, global warming I especially like because just in the 70s, they were warning us it was global cooling. That was what was going to kill off humans, which would be a good thing because then it would allow the Furbish Lauswort to be fruitful and multiply. All of their beliefs come from the basic rejection of God, of the command in Genesis, that God gave us the earth, the animals, the plants. We have dominion over them. We are in our Creator's image, and we have the power of creation within us. So the God-based religions see every human being as adding to the world, as contributing something, whereas they always see humans as polluting the world and overpopulation, and we're not going to be able to survive. They want us to live like the Aborigines, but of course, if we lived like the Aborigines, the entire, you know, North American continent could probably support about 200,000 people as opposed to 300 million. That is because of creative humans building things like nukes and highways and elevators and indoor plumbing. It's every human adds to the world, and we are in our Creator's image.
Yeah, while Christians view human beings as assets and liberals view them as liabilities, still a liberal will praise the value of one human being if, in fact, that's a convicted murderer on death row, then that is the true saint of the Church of Liberalism.
That's right. That's right. No, their peculiar affection for child molesters and murderers is like some bizarro version of Christian missionaries. I mean, they are like death row paparazzi, and it isn't the Christian impulse to say, okay, you're a fellow sinner, confess, take your punishment, and get right with God.
Yeah.
No, to the contrary, they encourage people like Tukey Williams, the founder of the Crips gang, who had murdered people and was executed in California earlier this year, or I guess the end of last year. They encourage him, no, tell a lie right before you die, Tukey. No, he's innocent. He wrote a children's book. Get him off. No,
right.
They love the killers. There's some weird compulsion that drives them to always release the guilty, and that has absolutely infected our justice system, because for a while these liberals were on the Supreme Court. And I mean, you see the crime rate shoot up in the 70s and 80s precisely as a result of liberal policies, of liberal Supreme Court rulings, and only now are we starting to fight our way back with Republican legislatures building prisons and trying to alter some aspects of Supreme Court law that gives, you know, the guilty an equal chance to get off as the innocent.
Ann Coulter, when I get to interview you, which tends to be when you've got a new bestseller out, I enjoy reading it at a local Starbucks because it always attracts a group. And this book, Godless, was no exception, but I got to tell you, this gal approached me and she said, I'm a rep for book publishers, and so I just wanted to say hi. And I said, oh, who do you represent? She said, well, many publishers, but I work with Target and Walgreens and all these chains. So she said, what are you reading? So I showed her the book cover, which has your name, The Church of Liberalism, Godless. And she said, oh, she's the romance novelist?
Oh, that's Catherine Coulter. I wish I'd have a lot more money.
And so here's this rep. And I said, well, yeah, to tell you the truth, this one is a real tearjerker. And it comes out of liberal Kansas is the setting. You got to push this book. And she just thanked me and went on her way. So, well, let me ask you about how you blast liberals for their weakness on crime. And you give an example how they desire to disregard hard evidence, even against a murderer, if the police somehow violated our process in obtaining the evidence.
Right. I mean, this has become so imbued in Americans. I think a lot of people don't realize how crazy it is and how it was treated as an outrageous and shocking ruling at the time, the exclusionary rule. Because a cop does something wrong, the perp goes free. Well, how about punishing the cop? I mean, at the time, the dissenters in that case were warning, you are experimenting with people's lives. It really is one of the most horrendous decisions the Supreme Court has ever issued, and and Republicans have tried to overrule it, Ed Meese, for example, to get it modified, and of course you have the ACLU screaming when that's going on, oh, he doesn't understand the Constitution, it's constitutional rights. You know, whenever liberals start talking about constitutional rights, it's like their invocation of science. It has nothing to do with the Constitution, just as their invocation of science rarely has anything to do with science. What it means is what liberals want.
Well, Fox News legal analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano, sadly, he defended throwing out such evidence. And I said to him on a recent interview, it would be wrong to acquit a rapist who videotaped his crime just because the tape was found during an improper search of a car. And Judge Napolitano said, well, that's a hard case. And actually, Judge, no, that's a really easy case.
Yes, and they say Fox News is conservative. Judge Napolitano is a very nice man. He's not a federal judge. He was a state court judge.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution isn't his specialty.
Well, that's a good point. My uncle, by the way, is a well-known criminal defense attorney, and I don't know where you might put a comma in that, back in New Jersey, and he and Judge Napolitano know each other. But I want to ask you, you write about Willie Horton.
Yes, I've been dying to get to that Willie Horton story for years now.
Yeah, and it's an incredible story. Why don't you describe it to the audience, but then I want to challenge you on something about it.
Well, the reason it was so enraging all these years is that, well, the basic Willie Horton story is Horton was a heinous murderer. He'd already been I think convicted, but certainly charged with attempted murder, in another state. He comes up to Massachusetts, blows away a store clerk, after the store clerk, at a convenience store had given him the money, young teenage kid.
A 17-year-old boy.
Right, chops up the body, after the money had been turned over, kills him, chops up the body, stuffs it in a garbage can. Because Michael Dukakis had vetoed the death penalty, the greatest penalty, Willie Horton could get, in that case, was life in prison without parole. So remember this case whenever you hear liberals saying, oh, what do we need the death penalty for? Life in prison without parole, that's just as bad.
Right.
No, the reason you need, among the reasons you need the death penalty is without it, eventually liberals will come in and start releasing the criminals sentenced to life in prison without parole. And that's what happened in Massachusetts, despite, the details aren't important, precisely because of a policy for furloughs for first-degree murderers, without possibility of parole, Willie Horton was released for these weekend furloughs.
Michael Dukakis, his convicted murderers get weekend furloughs.
Right.
He defended this to the end.
Ferociously. It was absolute. And then, of course, he was running for president. This is the man that Democrats wanted to be president of the United States. He ran in 1988 against George Bush, and Republicans thought, well, that doesn't complete the story. On one of his furloughs, Willie Horton went down to Maryland, held an engaged couple hostage, viciously beat the man, tied him up in the basement. The fiancé came home. He jumped her, cut her clothes off with a knife, raped her, continued to maraud throughout the house. He had the man tied up in the basement was telling him where the jewelry and the credit cards are. He was just, sticking around for the fun of the torture and rape. The man eventually managed to escape, went to some houses. When Willie Horton realized that the man had escaped, he fled. The police caught him. And the judge sentencing Willie Horton in Maryland said, I am not returning you to Massachusetts because I don't want to run the risk of your ever being released again.
Exactly.
This was a great issue. Democrats, are always saying, oh, let's not talk about character. That's not a good issue for them. let's talk about the issues.
Yeah.
Well, this was as relevant an issue as you were ever going to get. Michael Dukakis absolutely represented the liberal approach to criminal law in America, which is set the criminals free. When Bush raised it, they tried responding with various tendentious arguments. None of them worked. Dukakis was losing ground, and so liberals did what they always do when they're losing an argument. They accused the Bush administration of racism in the ad. That was very late in the day when they suddenly discovered it was racist to mention Willie Horton.
Yeah, and in fact, it was Al Gore, you point out, who brought up Willie Horton first, the Bush administration never even indicated the race of Willie Horton or his victims.
Right, and it must have surely wished that he were any race other than blacks. Give us an Aleut. Give us a white man.
Yeah.
Give us a Chinese.
Yeah, right, right.
Anything but this. But it was too good an issue for them not to use. And since that day, whenever you hear Willie Horton come up on TV or so on and so forth, it's always Republicans who are supposed to be embarrassed by this. Well, I've just told the full story, which you cannot find. I mean, it was somewhat amazing. I didn't go into this too much because I basically covered it in slander, how liberals lie. But it was astonishing back before you had the internet, back before you had, you know, newspapers like the Washington Times, and even, you know, the competition of cable news or talk radio, how the Willie Horton issue is now portrayed. You know, you can look it up now in the Nexus archives. All you ever heard about Willie Horton was
it's racism.
It's racist. You never heard about his crimes in the media.
Yeah, so Willie Horton is a saint to the left.
Right.
And, of course, he is the ultimate example of how liberals don't know how to fight crime.
Right.
Okay.
And I just want to turn it around. Henceforth, this should be an issue liberals are embarrassed about, not conservatives.
Exactly. Now, Ann, I want to quote something you say about Willie Horton on page 62, and then I want to challenge you on this point.
Okay.
You say it is a point of pride with liberals that Horton came back from his first 9 furloughs without killing anybody. And that's a great sense of humor and a good point. Big deal. He went 9 rounds. He didn't kill anybody. He's a convicted murderer. You let him out and he murdered somebody.
Right.
Now, that point's fine. But make a contrast. On page 89 about Priscilla Owen, you don't mention something, and maybe you didn't know about it, but maybe you could correct it on the show. As a Texas Supreme Court justice, Priscilla Owen did not kill any of the first 9 baby does to come before the court for a judicial bypass abortion. But then baby 10 came along, and Priscilla Owen signed, you could read the ruling online, Priscilla Owen signed the ruling to kill baby 10 because a lower court...
I don't know what the baby doe case is.
Well, in Texas, you know, they have their parental notification.
Oh, the parental notification.
With a judicial bypass, so that if the court says the mother can have an abortion,
right,
then she can without her parents knowing about it.
Right.
Well, Priscilla Owen ruled on the 10th baby to come before the Texas Supreme Court. In fact, she signed the ruling to allow the killing of baby 10 because a lower court had missed the filing deadline for the facts of the case. And when we Christians talk about Priscilla Owen as a hero of, you know, pro-lifers, we brag that she didn't kill any of the first 9 baby does, but there is a complete blackout on the reality that she signed the death warrant to kill baby 10.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you.
Think of what that says about liberals and abortion. I assume that it was because she was following whatever the trial court had done. I'm not
defending her.
I'm just explaining what I believe probably happened.
Well, I could tell you why. The law in Texas gave a deadline. The lower court judge.
Right. So she was following the law, the letter of the law. Whether or not that's the right thing to do, it is certainly not a fanatical pro-lifer who will disregard the law. And yet, that is how she was treated by the left. That is their sacrament. That is the most important issue to them. I mean, the fact, it was not so much that Priscilla Owen, in my opinion, was a hero to pro-lifers, as that it showed the insane fanaticism of the left by opposing her.
Well, I agree, and your book establishes very clearly not only the errors in thinking by the left, but their downright wickedness. But, Ann, here's where I'd like to ask you, and I actually tried to ask you this last time I interviewed you. And I
weaseled out of it?
You didn't weasel out of it. The intensity increased, and we never got to the end of it. I would like you to consider that humanism and godlessness promotes legal positivism, where a judge can be approved of a decision regardless if it's immoral, if it violates do not murder, if it's godless, as long as the judge is following the process. World War II, after World War II, we tried German judges for murder, even though they said we were following precedent in the law. Don't you agree that Priscilla Owen was wrong for ruling to kill baby 10, even though she was following the legal process?
I don't really, I'm weaseling out again. I just don't feel comfortable commenting on a case I know nothing about. I feel like I'm on Hannity and Combs, where Alan gives me a certain set of facts. I'd really like to look up facts for myself.
All right, well, that's reasonable.
There are a lot of facts I look up, and there are a lot of things I write about, so I'd rather stick to the things I know.
All right, that's very reasonable. Then let me challenge you with one other observation you make in your book. You point out how liberals who support partial birth abortion, that's where thousands of late-term babies are killed annually, late-term babies, second and third trimester, and you describe this, I think right reasonably so, as sticking a fork into the baby's head and killing the baby.
Right.
That's close enough. It's a close enough implement. You know, they might use the scissors.
Right.
Now, after spending many pages of correctly identifying Rudy Giuliani as the one who fought to lower the crime rate in New York City, you don't point out to your readers something you know, but many of them might not, that he is radically supportive of abortion, even partial birth abortion.
Right, sure, liberals have asked me about this. That wasn't the point of the chapter. He's not in the abortion chapter. I'm not writing a campaign for him. I'm writing about a Republican response to crime. He's also bad on guns. He's also bad on gay marriage. In fact, I have been quite open, repeatedly telling people I would not vote for him for president, even if he were running against Hillary, unless he changes position on abortion. So I don't think I can really be taken to task for that. I'm not writing a biography
of
Rudy Giuliani.
Absolutely. And Ann Coulter, I agree with that. But here's what I think our best authors on the right do. We are expert at exposing the godlessness of liberals, but we give the conservatives who support abortion and other destructive policies, we give them a pass. And there are millions of right-wing Christians who think Giuliani would be a great leader, and to praise him at length for something he did good, but then point out while he saved 2,000 victims a year in New York City, he advocates over 1 million deaths a year in abortion and even partial birth abortion. I don't think you could praise him for the one without exposing him for the other.
If I were writing a biography of Rudy Giuliani, I would make that point.
If he was great at criminal justice, but he also wanted to he supported killing the Jews, would you have left that out of the chapter?
Yes.
You would have left that out?
Yes.
If he was a Nazi.
That isn't the point of the chapter.
All right.
But you're arguing about how someone writes a book and what she puts in particular chapters. No, I would not write about that. He also left his wife and cheated on his wife. There are a lot of problems with Giuliani.
Right.
I'm not holding him up as anything other than representing Republican policies on crime. And I have never seen the effect of a government policy so much for either the good or the ill, but in this case for the good, as what Rudy Giuliani did in the city of New York. And I think he couldn't switch on abortion. I mean, it was noticeable to those of us living in New York. Mm. He talks about abortion much the way Chris Matthews does. He doesn't seem particularly believable as a pro-choicer. There wasn't anything he could do about it as mayor of New York. And there was no way he was going to be elected mayor of New York if he didn't throw bones to the left on things that the mayor has absolutely nothing to do with.
About two
if
years ago.
If he wants to run for president, I think he should switch on abortion and gay marriage and guns.
About 2 years ago, Sean Hannity urged him on the air to rethink his position on abortion. And he firmly chastised Sean Hannity, basically told him it was none of his business to correct him. And Sean has been reasonably obedient in the 2 years since, pretty much not even letting his audience know. I want to ask you one last question, Ann Coulter.
Yes.
And you shouldn't need any particular details for this other than the principles. If a judge, a judge in America, has a case before him, and he could either follow stare decisis, precedent, Supreme Court ruling, and rule according to that, but if he does, he's violating do not murder. What should a judge in America do? Should he consider stare decisis or a Supreme Court ruling precedent and rule to intentionally kill the innocent? Or should he, as a judge?
No, of course not.
Right. Very good. Well, Ann, I hope.
Well, I think any conservative would answer that.
No.
We have 4 votes on the Supreme Court now to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Well, our pro-life justices on the Supreme Court, we've been documenting this, they are legal positivists. And they say that it has nothing to do with morality. It has nothing to do with the people looking to them to uphold any kind of moral principle. It only has to do with the process. And we are urging our conservative thinkers and authors to take on the issue of legal positivism, to address it, and to expose it, because most of our conservative leaders defend judges like Samuel Alito in 2000 when he ruled to keep legal partial birth abortion in New Jersey, and their defense is, well, that was the precedent.
We are so far afield of my book right now.
Well, all right.
I think we got to get back to the book or call a close to it.
Well, and it's a great book for exposing the godlessness of the left.
Thank you.
It is, and we highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Great talking to
you.
Okay,
good talking to you. Now, Ann Coulter is one who did not jump on the bandwagon and praise the judicial nominees of George W. Bush. She would point out how many of their rulings exposed the fact that they were liberals, and they ruled in a liberal way. But in asking Ann Coulter to challenge legal positivism and to agree that if a judge rules to kill the innocent, that judge is doing something wrong, she exhibited what my dear friend and talk show host, Dr. Larry Bates, did when I interviewed him some months ago. In principle, she'll agree that a judge should not violate do not murder. But if you give a specific example, like Samuel Alito followed precedent and he ruled that to keep partial birth abortion legal in New Jersey, then they don't want to apply their principle. They don't want to apply their belief. They want to either defend what Alito did or not answer the question. And why? We're conservatives. We're not afraid of our beliefs like liberals. We don't try to dodge the issues. Why can't we answer clearly? If the Supreme Court tells a lower court judge you need to kill baby 10 or you need to keep partial birth abortion legal, then that lower court judge said, I would never violate do not murder in order to comply with some humanist man-made legal process. I'm not going to do it. Nothing justifies the intentional killing of the innocent. Now, will Ann Coulter look into Priscilla Owen killing baby 10? Will she? You know, that is divisive in the Republican camp, and the Republican conservative pro-life camp, or Samuel Alito, voting to keep legal partial birth abortion. How about that? So these things, of course, are devastating that conservative Christians are having a hard time acknowledging these. So we're out of time. This is Bob Enyart. You've been listening to Bob Enyart Live. Our website, KGOV.com. God bless you all.